Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be rejoined by Brandon Streisning and Bilge Ibiri of Vulture. They are the kind of major domos of the Vulture Action Stunt Award. Spectacular, now annual. You never call an award show annual after the first one because you don't know. That might be a one and done. But it is now officially an annual thing because we've got 2 years running. Congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So I was excited about this year's awards because you guys asked me to nominate and vote on the entries. Hopefully I did a creditable job there. But it was an interesting kind of peek behind the scenes because there's a lot of things you have to think about when you're putting together lists like this. For instance, one category in particular gave me a ton of trouble. And I want to run it by you guys because maybe I was alone here. Maybe I'm the only one thinking too much about this. But it was the practical explosion effect. Because that's the sort of thing where sometimes it's very, very hard to judge what is practically done, what is digitally done, what is, you know, a fake CGI thing. For instance, I love the what ended up coming in second place just barely with the extraction fist punch jail breakout sequence. Great sequence. I love that. But I wasn't 100% sure his hand was actually on fire. I don't know. I wasn't sure. So how did you guys kind of navigate that? Did people have questions? Like, how did that actually work?
So we do have someone behind the scenes a little bit who does work with like VFX and everything, who has helped us in the past. Like, for example, last year, a big question was the Batman. When the Batman was nominated, like the explosion, you know, after the big chase scene, I thought that was all fake, and that wasn't. So that surprised me. But I don't know. That is something that we have to do a lot of like research into. Luckily for Extraction, I had interviewed Sam Hargrave like a long time ago last year, and he talked about doing that scene, and he spoke very openly about lighting Chris Hemsworth on fire. So that one was a little bit easier. But yeah, it is something that we have to put a lot of like thought into and like look into who, like what was actually done, because, you know, sometimes you're right. It is all CG and you don't even know it.
Yeah. I mean, and even with something like Oppenheimer, you know, which is obviously pretty much totally practical, we're talking about multiple explosions. We're talking about multiple explosions in multiple places and with multiple chemicals and things like that to enhance certain elements. You know, so even there, we're talking about a specific explosion on screen, but really all the work that goes into it, be it practical or VFX or, you know, a combination of both. I mean, it's always, you know, the line is always changing. And it's not just with stuff like explosions. I mean, last year, you know, we had the big fight in RRR, which some people at the time said, oh, that looks very CG. And in fact, the same colleague of ours who works in VFX was like, you know, it took him 30 days to shoot it. You know, like, yeah, there's probably a lot of CG in there, but like it counts, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, that is the other thing that is hard to disentangle in the modern filmmaking environment, because even the stuff that is touted as like, here is this great practical effect, we're going to have Tom Cruise jumping off a mountain into a base jump off a motorcycle. And, you know, we all watched the behind the scenes stuff when they were putting that together. We saw the amount of, you know, kind of CGI painting that goes into making the making it all look like it should for the movie, that it, so it doesn't just look like a ramp, that it does, you know, there is an effect. There are digital effects. When you guys are thinking about this, where do you draw the line on what counts as a practical effect and what counts as a digital effect?
That's a good question.
I don't know that we draw a line specifically. Yeah. I mean, it sort of changes with each one. It's kind of, you know, first of all, people vote, you know, people vote and they'll vote for all sorts of things. And we try to stay as true as possible to the tally. And usually, I don't know any time we've actually gotten votes for something and said, no, that doesn't count. You know, because these people are professionals or people in the know about this world, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're not going to get votes for like an animated right. film. I mean, you know, I'm trying to think right. of examples because that's right, the other right. thing. I mean, we, and I think we do this in the media too, obviously, you know, we tend to create this sort of almost imaginary battle between CG, VFX and practical stunts, special effects, what have you, to the point where now like VFX means CGI and special effects means the other thing. And that's not actually true. And you know, on most movies, people are collaborating on this stuff. I mean, they're working together. And so you might see an explosion that's been, you know, kind of goosed up with CG, you know, computer generated effects, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there wasn't an explosion there. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. and yeah, like you mentioned the base jump in Mission Impossible, you know, like he's driving that thing off a ramp, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And in the movie, it's like, it looks like a cliff. It actually kind of looks slightly fake once you know that there's a ramp right. there and that it's actually like just a painted, you know, cliff yeah. that he's jumping off of. It's a ramp, you know? If you had jumped a motorcycle off an actual cliff, it would not go like that, you know?
Right.
So, so there, you have to, like, the line changes with each effect and with each stunt.
I do like how the line has changed a little bit too, because like when you think of something like Way of Water, that, like, you watch that movie and I think your brain almost forgets that there are people on a set doing stunts for that movie, because it is all animated at the end of the day, but like there's just like such a, like they merge together, and like that's the clearest example I can think of, like the two like practical and, you know, visual effects kind of, well, I guess like you said, Bilga, there is, people kind of conflate visual effects with CGI, which isn't true, but yeah, like I do like how the line is kind of being blurred a little bit, because I'll admit, like, I loved Way of Water. It was one of my favorite movies from, like, I guess that was 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. But I completely, like, it just went right over my head that, yeah, of course, there's people on a set, you know, fist fighting, doing stunts and everything. And they're just, you know, they're wearing, you know, tennis balls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it is. It's interesting to think about, especially because, again, we watch the behind the scenes, you know, post production stuff, and we see, you know, my favorite thing about Avatar the Way of Water, there's a sequence where James Cameron is explaining, like, well, I had to make his forearm like 3 inches longer in this shot, and we did that digitally, and it's just like, you don't notice any of this at the time, but also people are actually doing the things. You have to make, there has to be a person there, their arm to make longer, you know. It's interesting.
Yeah. And in fact, I mean, even if you look at like classic Disney animated films, I mean, if you look at the production histories of those, very often they're drawing from life, you know, they're drawing from life. They have life mm-hmm. models. I mean, you know, one of my favorite books as a kid, and I still have it somewhere around here, was The Art of Animation, which I believe came out around the time of Sleeping Beauty. But it has a lot of behind the scenes photos of the animators working. And it's like when the prince is going through the, you know, the forest of thorns, like, that's an actual guy that they're drawing who's going through, mm-hmm. like, you know, thorns, and he's got a little fake sword and everything. I mean, so there's a lot of, we think all this stuff is made up, and it's just not. You know,
I think the death of the DVD extra has really hurt the way we yeah. talk about things.
Yeah, no, it has, actually.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's again, you watch these things, and you get a real... I don't know. We talk about Criterion and whatever as film school in a box, and there is an element of that to these action films as well. All right, so let's talk about the awards. Let's talk about the actual awards. I mean, this was the year of John Wick 4. You know, when I was discussing it with you, Brandon, I was like, I could have picked John Wick in every category, pretty much, almost, except for the, you know, stunt sequence in a non-action film. Let us pay tribute to John Wick 4 and the, not just the excellent stunts, but the variety that encompassed the awards this year. Brandon, you want to pick your favorite sequence? There are probably like 6 different sequences you could pick for your favorite from the film. What's yours?
It's so funny because before I answer that, I just want to like shout Bilga out again. I already did it on Twitter after the awards, but like, you saw the movie early, and he tweeted like right after seeing it, like, I think we need to add a best fall category for the stunts for John Wick, and that's what ended up winning stunt of the year, was the stair fall. And I remember someone even asked him, though, like, well, so I forget, like, something about, like, someone asked him for clarification. He's like, well, actually, there's, like, multiple falls in the movie that could be nominated. So it's like, I like you said, there's such a diversity of stunt work in John Wick 4 alone that it's, like, kind of nuts. And I do think at the end of the day, it is the stair fall that's my favorite. It's like, I think that's such an already iconic scene. It's just so, it's such a perfect encapsulation of, like, John Wick as a character, his journey over the four movies, and it's just like bananas to watch. And I love that we were able to kind of point out that, like, I think there was a, again, people forgetting, you know, all the work that goes into this kind of stuff. There were a lot of people that were like, oh, I can't believe Keanu got thrown down a flight of stairs. And it was like, well, he didn't. It was Vincent Bouillon. And so I was happy to be able to shout him out a little bit, too, because he did, like, the lion's share of that work. But that's probably my favorite stunt in that movie was just Wick being thrown down the stairs.
Bilger, what did you, now we're I don't know, a year out or so of John Wick 4. Looking back on it, what is your favorite sequence from that film?
I think my favorite sequence is probably the Arc de Triomphe, you know, car melee. I don't even know what to call it.
The Frogger car.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's not like, it's not a stunt. You know, it's like a million stunts. There are dog stunts. Mm-hmm. There, you know, there's fighting stunts. There's shooting. There's car stunts. There's tons of CGI, I'm sure. You know, so it's, I always feel weird calling something like that a stunt, but that's, you know, that's certainly my favorite sequence. I love the fall too, though. I mean, the fall is great because it's so playful. And in the end, like, a fall, like, high falls are obviously impressive, but, you know, a stair fall is like, it's kind of a rinky dink stunt on screen. Like, just although probably of all the stunts that people do, that might be the one that actually hurts the most. But I love how just, like, it just goes on and on and on, and it becomes, you know, it achieves this almost meta quality where you're like, okay, that's a stunt, and they're just going for it and they're doing it. And it's like, there's no, like, you don't have to worry about authenticity. It's a guy rolling down the stairs and he's doing it over and over again. And it kind of, at some point you're like, well, at some point he would probably break his fall and not go all the way, but, like, I kind of want to see him go all the way down, so I'm totally locked in, you know. Like, it's the kind of stunt that creates this dialogue between the viewer and the movie where you're kind of like, okay, I see what they're doing there. It's like, it's a fourth wall thing almost, you know, breaking a fourth wall thing.
Yeah. Brandon, I was glad you mentioned Vincent Bouillon, because I want to I want to draw attention to his work, but also the work of Marco Zaror, who is great, and whose face you see, you know, more because he's, you know, also playing a character in the movie. And that is really the whole point of this exercise, is to remind people that these are actual professionals who are doing dangerous things for our entertainment, and somebody should pay some attention to them and give them some give them some love.
Yeah, and I like this year, I think in that category we had a better spread of what it actually means to be a stunt performer, because you had people who are choreographers, you had doubles, you had actors on screen like Marco Zaror. And I think last year there was a little bit of like, oh, well, we saw someone on screen doing stunts, and so that's who's going to be nominated. And that's fine too, like Scott Adkins won last year, and I think that there is a little bit of a blurring of the line between people like him and Marco Zaror, because they will show up and create some of the choreographies. Adkins especially. I mean, I don't know how much he did for John Wick, but like on his own movies where he's the star, he's responsible for most of the choreography. So I do like being able to highlight that stuff. And yeah, like a guy like Marco Zaror, he's been someone that I've loved for years. And it's just, it was so fun to be able to see him get to kind of, I mean, he was like one of the main heavies in John Wick. And it was like so fun to see him, you know, do all that, and then also in his own, you know, little DTV world, have a movie like Fist of the Condor last year, where he kind of created an entire new martial art for that movie. I don't remember the exact details behind that. I did interview him, and he told me all about it, and I feel bad because that was so long ago. But But yeah, he's such an interesting guy, and it's just very fun to be able to highlight those kind of people because it gives you a look into how extensive stunt work is in Hollywood. It's not just somebody, you know, falling off a building onto like a mattress. You know, there's a lot of different facets to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing about this year's Stunt Awards that even though one movie won like almost all the awards, like I felt like the Stunt Awards were actually evolving a little bit, and people were becoming a little more aware of the actual stunt performers. Part of it was last year, you know, we had Top Gun Maverick, which is, I mean, when you get a Tom Cruise movie, it's all about him and how he does his own stunts. And, and Maverick last year was defined by the fact that, you know, they sent all those actors up in those planes to get the real facial responses to, like, you know, 5Gs or whatever the hell it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, people are learning more about stunts and how stunts work. And as that happens, you get more interesting choices and you get just more interesting conversation around it. I think something similar is going to happen with The Fall Guy, you know, like The Fall Guy, which is all about stunt doubles. I mean, the thing David Leitch told me when I interviewed him about it, and just kind of about how, you know, how they use doubles and things like that. And how, you know, he was a stunt double, obviously, for many years for a variety of people, including most notably Brad Pitt. And he said, you know, we're all playing the character, you know, like it's about keeping the character alive. I mean, yes, the actor is kind of the person that's identified with the character, but we're all kind of playing the character, you know? So, and in The Fall Guy, you know, Ryan Gosling has a guy to do his high falls. He has a guy to do his parkour and to, you know, get hit by a car. He has a guy who does his vehicular stunts, and he's been very good about highlighting them. So really it's like five guys playing that character. And I think people are becoming more and more aware of that now. It's not just this actor's doing his own stunts and maybe there's a double who kind of shows up every once in a while. It's like, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of people playing this character, you know?
Yeah, in that vein, can we talk, Brandon, for a minute about Henry Kingi? Is that... can we talk about Henry Kingi? Because I loved your tribute to him as you know, the kind of Lifetime Achievement Award, because it's not just, you know, I remember him from Predator 2, right? And movies like that. But the stuff I had no idea about was that he was also a driver on the Fast and Furious movies, and you know, he is a accomplished stunt professional across many different disciplines, as well as something of a civil rights activist in his own way. So tell folks about, educate people about Mr. Kingi.
So he was very fun to write about and to talk to because he like, honestly, I could have listened to him talk forever. We had like a 2-hour conversation and I asked maybe 5 questions across those 2 hours. Like he was very, forthcoming, and it was just so cool to listen to his story. And he, like, you could go many different ways for Lifetime Achievement, but like, I feel like at least my goal with this is to give someone the, you know, tribute that wouldn't normally get it, because like, everything's been said about a guy like Jackie Chan or something. So mm-hmm. So for a guy like Henry Kingi, it was really fun to be able to illuminate, you know, he's the kind of guy that you might see on screen and you think like, oh, that's just an extra or something. And, you know, you wouldn't think anything of it. Like in Predator 2, like he has a very memorable scene, but you wouldn't give that kind of character or actor, second thought. But then listening to him talk, and then, you know, I talked a little bit to Craig Baxley, who had worked with him on the A-Team and on Stone Cold with Brian Bosworth, one of my favorite movies. and it's just hearing all the different stories about how, you know, he's responsible for driving and stuff that you would never even think about. The one that blew me away was in Fast 5, the vault heist. I completely, you know, we're talking about the melding of CG and practical. I had no idea that that vault was practical on any level. Like, and the fact that it was built around a pickup truck that he was driving. And part of the reason for that, he said, was that he was brought onto the series for the 4th movie. And after it came out, the stunt team and the director all had a discussion. Like, they were all like, we didn't like the CG in that 4th movie at all. It was terrible. Let's figure out a way to do this better. And that was part of it, was you know, something that you could have just done in post, you know, create a vault and everything. It was like, no, let's try to make this look as real as possible. So we're going to put a guy inside like a pickup truck and drag him around a little bit. And I just thought that that was so fascinating. I never considered that before talking to him.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea myself. I always just assumed it was fairly good, but I always assumed it was just CGI.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the thing about stunts and stunt professionals and talking to them is they are so fun to talk to. They have the greatest stories, and they're not like magicians who, you know, want to keep all their stuff secret. Like, they love talking about how they did this stuff. And they can really get into to like the nitty gritty of it. This is one of the reasons why over the years I became such a kind of, you know, such a proponent of like stunt awards. I was never like a big action guy, you know, like I was the guy who was watching like, you know, Italian movies and stuff as a kid. Like, I came to action later, but part of it was over the years, I just noticed every time I interviewed a stunt person, like I would, you know, I remember I had to interview Kane Hodder, who played, you know, Jason Voorhees in a bunch of movies. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I did an interview with, Randy Butcher, kind of assessing how, ranking Tom Cruise's stunts. He'd never worked with Tom Cruise, but he knew how they had done all these various stunts. And when they talk about this stuff, it's like mind expanding, right? It's not just, oh, I had a bunch of pads and I jumped off a thing and I was on a bungee cord. It's like, no. Like, here are the different things that you have to do, and here are the calculations you have to make. Like, they're actually like, this is really sophisticated stuff. Like, again, mm-hmm. with the Fall Guy, I was talking to them about doing like this, you know, 250-foot, you know, car jump. And it's like, there's so much math is involved in this thing, and like calculating wind resistance and all these like cool nerdy things that they're doing. Which, you know, then you realize, oh, right, like stunt people are like, you know, they're operating on so many levels, and they have to operate on all those levels, and they have to be really good at all those levels, because otherwise people die, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that, you know, over the years, what's made me so kind of militant about, you know, giving these people an Oscar finally is like, you know, they are doing so much work and so much preparation, and, you know, incorporating all sorts of science and math and all this stuff, as well as like just filmmaking savvy. It's really just so impressive what they do. And they love talking about it. They're just like the most fun people to interview always, because they have no media training, you know, they have no filter. They'll just go on, you know, it's great.
Well, that's like Henry also, like, he told me a story about on Bad Boys 2, how he almost died doing, you know, there's that famous scene in Bad Boys. I mean, I don't know how famous it is. It's famous for me because I love Michael Bay, but like when they're going down the hillside and like wrecking into all those little huts. That's straight out of Police Story, which made me happy. But he told a story about how they did all these, they had all these precautions and put all this work into making sure it went exactly right. But then the thing that almost killed him was just a freak thing where, like, it somehow the bulletproof glass was like pierced by a piece of wood, and that shouldn't happen, and it's just like a freak accident. And he's telling me this story, and what I found so striking is like, he's like, it was within inches of piercing my heart, but he's laughing his ass off the entire time he's telling the story. And it's just so funny, because it's like, I'm sitting there riveted and also like, oh my God, you could have died. And he's like, no, it was great. I had so much fun.
Yeah, stunt guys are definitely built different. Did you guys think that we were going to get a stunt category announcement at the Oscars when they started that montage, and then they kind of pulled the rug out? No, just a montage, folks.
I definitely did. I was kind of hopeful for a minute, and then that just went nowhere. But it was nice to see them acknowledge it, I guess.
I feel like it's going to happen more than I have been often skeptical in the past that it would happen. I feel more than ever now that it's going to happen, especially if the Fall Guy is hit. I knew they weren't going to announce it because there is actually a song at the end of Fall Guy about how there's no Oscar for stunts. So just in terms of just the juju of that movie, it would not make sense to announce an Oscar like right before it comes out, maybe after, but, No, I mean, you know, they announced the casting director award this year, which I think is actually a very good thing. I think that absolutely, you know, casting directors should have an Oscar. And they have been trying to get one for a long time, and they're, you know, they're an actual branch of the Academy, so it makes perfect sense. But I think the announcement of that Oscar category makes it brings us closer to the stunt Oscar as well, because it's for the longest time it was like, we can't add any more categories, we got to cut more categories, the show is too long, movies suck anyway, right, we need less awards, why do we even have the Oscars, you know, why can't we just have the Grammys, you know? And it's like, it just got so annoying for a while, and now they've doubled back and went, oh right, this is actually the awards show people watch. Like, they don't watch the others, so we should maybe not try to be like the freaking Emmys, and maybe we should be more like the Oscars. So they've gotten better at celebrating the movies. They've gotten better about like the categories and like putting them on TV and putting them on the show. And apparently they don't have any problems with adding a category now. So it's like, well, you know, most of your arguments against the stunt Oscar are now gone, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful too, because when I spoke to Stahelski last year, I asked him about it, and he's like, I'm one of the people that meet with the Academy. Like, they, you know, and we talk about, you know, what's this going to look like? And his big point, which I completely understand, because it's something we kind of had trouble with putting these awards together in the first place, was he was like, who do you award though? And he was like, that's our big, what we're running into right now is like, where does the award go? And I think that we've gotten better about that this year, especially with, you know, who we're supposed to award, you know, because there's so many people that the stunt goes into, and, you know, you can't just say, oh, well, it was the director, oh, it was this or that. So, right. So that is something that I think the Oscars are running into. But at the same time, every time I hear that, I mean, of course, I'm not involved. He would know way more than I would. But I'm always just like, pick someone and just give it to them. Like, yeah. But I know it's more complicated than that.
Sure.
But.
No, totally. And look, here's, you know, I have a stuntman friend who lives in Dallas now, and we get together every once in a while. And he takes issue with the push for the Academy Award for stunts. I think we may have talked about this last year a little bit, but his argument is very much the same here, is who do you award? And also, you know, how do you stop the stunt coordinator from putting himself into the best stunts? And how do you stop people from like trying to one-up each other so much that somebody gets killed, you know, trying to win an award? Like, those are the things that he, and I think some other folks in that circle think about. I mean, it's a concern.
It's a concern, but it's not, I mean, I'm not concerned about it. Well, here's the thing. First of all, in terms of who gets the award, I think Stahelski has kind of taken over from Jack Gill, who was the guy for the longest time trying to get this award to happen. And Jack's thing was always, it goes to the stunt coordinator. You know, if you're giving an award for best stunts, it goes to the stunt coordinator. If you're giving an award for like best specific stunt, then, you know, then you get into issues of like, well, who performed it? Who did this? Who did that? But really, you just go for best stunts. Now, SAG obviously has a best stunt ensemble award, but that's also because it's SAG. It's, you know, that, you know, the SAG awards the performers and the people who are members of SAG, you know? So I think it would go to the stunt coordinator, or action designer, if you will. And as for people want, I mean, look, there are stunt awards already, and there's a SAG award. There's, you know, the Canadian Academy gives one. The stunts have their own awards, the Taurus Awards. We give, like, there are already pretty, pretty big incentives to go start killing people if that was a thing that they were going to do. But also, like, I mean, you know, and look, you know, Sonny, you said your friend is a stunt person, so I would defer to their expertise in this matter. But, you know, their first job is security. Like, that's the very first thing they do. Like, that's not, you know, yes, they're trying to design spectacular stunts and all that, but, like, safety is, like, the number one rule, the number two rule, the number three rule. And if anything, over the years, stunts have gotten safer, right? I mean, like, it used to be back in the days when nobody gave a crap about the stunt people. They were like dying left and right. They were underpaid. They were totally anonymous, you know. And over the years, as it's become a more visible profession, and there have been awards and things like that, and people paid more attention to them, they haven't been, you know, there isn't, I mean, yes, every once in a while, tragic things do happen, but it's not like there's been this increase in, you know, danger, and injury and things like that. So, it hasn't happened as far as I can tell. And there have been more and more awards. So I don't know that the Oscar is going to be this one award that suddenly clicks into place, you know, everybody's death instinct. I don't know. I mean, yeah. There's also a lot of people on film sets who look down on the stunt people. And I feel like some of that comes into play here, because it's kind of like, well, you know, these yokels are going to kill themselves trying to get a, you know, big gold statue. It's like, no, they're professionals, man. They don't want to die. I don't know what I'm supposed to say about this. Like, you know, like, why would they endanger themselves? I mean, they'll do what they need to do to, you know, to work on the film. I mean, like, you know, you're not giving an award for most dangerous stunt. You're giving an award for best stunt. Like, you know, kind of it.
Yeah. One of my favorite categories this year, because it was a difficult one to pick the choices for, because you really have to like think in a different sort of way. But it was about the best stunt sequence in a non-action film, which leads to I believe it was Jennifer Lawrence won that one, right? For the team behind the Jennifer Lawrence fight on the beach, the nude fight No Hard Feelings. Thank you. But there were a bunch of great sequences in these movies. I remember again, I was like sitting there thinking like, God, what am I going to pick? Well, I didn't love Bottoms, but I did really like that last sequence in Bottoms. That was pretty funny. We should get that in there. And then Beau Is Afraid had that great, you know, running across the street sequence. I'm just curious how other folks kind of reacted to that sequence and that award, and how the decision, how the people you talked to like kind of made up their minds on what to pick there, because it's a weird one to think about.
It is. It's funny, like that does get the most disparate amount of nominations, because like there's just so much that people draw from. And I think from what I've seen, just in terms of like reaction to it, is when every time the awards are announced, like especially on Twitter, it seems like that's one of the ones that people are talking about the most. They're just very excited that like it's such a weird category, because like you said, like there's like, I mean, Beau Is Afraid is a very weird, funny movie, but it also is like in like kind of like an art house movie. So you have that, and then you have like, you know, a rom-com with No Hard Feelings. You have just like a straight up comedy with Bottoms, and like a drama with The Iron Claw and everything. It's just such a funny like group of things. And I think that's my favorite category every year. And one of the hard things was to determine was like, is that actually Jennifer Lawrence? And like, from what I was able to find, like, I think most of that was, which is crazy, because one of my friends kept pointing out, he was like, if that's her, she's doing one of the best suplexes I've ever seen in my life. And I don't know if that's her, but like, it's hard to tell. And then you don't want to get into the whole weird weeds of like, well, do I pause it and try to see if it's her, but then I'm not pausing, you know, like I don't want to be a creep and like
frame by frame break.
Is Mr. Skin still around? Is that, yeah. remember that old website?
It's a fun, interesting category, because like you say, it's hard to make. All right, so John Wick 4 is the big winner of the year, and it really kind of sucked the oxygen out of a lot of the other films that got nominated and got some attention. So what, if you had to pick one sequence from a non-John Wick film for folks to watch, what would you guys pick from 2023? So I'll let you think for a second here, then I'll go to Brandon first.
So I have an answer right out of the gate, and it's probably not the best stunt that was nominated, but it's one that I think my mission in life is to get people to watch more DTV action. And so it's always nice when that stuff gets nominated, and it's not the greatest fight in the world. It's not like one, but it really did blow me away. There's a fight in Sniper Grit, which is the 10th Sniper movie. It's Sniper GRIT, because it's an acronym, because they're G.I. Joe now. But like, I didn't know that there were 10 Sniper movies. One of my friends, he goes by Vice Victus on Twitter. He's been a big proponent of these. Some of these are actually good. People need to check them out. And I didn't realize that. I knew that there were a couple of Sniper sequels with Tom Berenger. I didn't know that there were 10, that they're all in canon with one another. Most of them are about his son. And I watched this movie and I was blown away by how fun it was, how good it looked. But then there's a fight at the end where the character Lady Death, played by Luna Fujimoto, who's like an up-and-coming martial artist, it's like a one or two take fight scene. And that can get kind of old after a while, like everyone's trying to do the one take scene. But there's just something really exciting about this very low budget movie just breaking out. Like, they're like, hey, we have an accomplished martial artist here. Let's let her show off what she can do. And it's really fun to watch, and she's very talented. And so that's the one I would, you know, want to highlight and have people seek out, because I think this attitude's changing, but I still think a lot of people think DTV or, like, you know, Bruce Willis movies you find at Walmart that nobody's watching. But there's a lot of good stuff there, and I think that's like a definitely one of the better ones in the last few years.
All right, Bilge?
You know, it's not, I don't think it's really considered a stunt. And in fact, the filmmaker doesn't even really think of it as a stunt. But the one I keep thinking about is the crash at the Mille Miglia in Michael Mann's Ferrari. You know, the big climactic, horrific crash that, like, kills 9 people. I did a whole piece about this, and I, you know, I interviewed Mann and I interviewed some other folks about it, and, you know, the kind of preparation and work that went into it, lots of CG happening in that scene, but, you know, that is an actual car that's flying through the air, and in fact, I mean, Mann described how they prepared for that scene. They went to an airfield and just, like, launched, like, 6 Miatas into the air just to see how they would roll. You know, they use this thing called an air cannon, which I didn't know about, but I learned about this, which is, you know, and by the way, a very good air cannon roll scene in The Fall Guy. But it's a device. It was actually it was first used on the film McQ, and in fact, it was often referred to, I believe, as the McQ cannon. But it's built into the side of the car, and it's a pressurized thing that basically, as the car is driving, you punch it, it hits the ground, and then launches the car into the air and has it do that roll. So basically, they they tested it, and apparently Miatas are sort of the exact sort of specifications as the Ferrari cars that they were that they were working with in the film. So so they rolled this thing, and they had actually stunt. There wasn't a driver inside the car, but they rolled the car, and then there were stunt people in its path who were kind of there, and then they replaced them with dummies, had the car roll into them, and then they put the people back in, and then sort of digitally merged everything. But, you know, so there's, like, stunts involved in that scene, although, you know, people wouldn't really describe it as a stunt. But to me, it's kind of like, well, that's one of the best scenes of the year. And that's, like, a movie that people, as far as I'm concerned, really need to see. So,
well, it's a, I mean, I saw that one in a theater, and it's a very much air goes out of the room sequence, like a collective gasp of breath.
Yeah.
When that unfolds, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Okay. There's so much more to cover here, but the last thing I wanted to focus on was the 100 best stunt sequences package that you guys put together as part of this, which is I've sent this to several people and just said, look, you don't have to watch all the clips, but it's kind of amazing just to go through them and watch the progression of action as a concept on film over the last 120 years or whatever, you know, all the way back to the first cat video, as you guys put it. So let's take one step back. You come up with this idea. You're like, all right, we need 100 action sequences. How are we going to put this together? How did you guys, narrow the list down? I think I saw on Twitter you said, one of you guys said that you were like, well, are we even going to have 100 sequences? Are there 100 sequences? And then you were like, well, maybe we go to 200. How did that process work internally for you guys?
Well, Bilge definitely has more experience with this because he's done a lot of lists for Vulture like this, but this was my first time and it was kind of fun to see it unfold because we would meet I think it was like once a week for a month or two, just like a bunch of us, like a bunch of the people that worked on the piece, and we would basically hash it out, like what gets to stay. And there was like really some, you know, very fun but painful conversations about what we had to leave off and everything. And I think I tweeted about this at one point during the course of like working on it. At one point, it's like one of my favorite things I've ever heard. Bilga compared the Yoda and Dooku fight in Attack of the Clones to when Dylan goes electric, and like it just, that was such a fun like thing, because it's like we're all like trying to like make our case for why this fight should stay, why this is influential and everything, and you know it was a very fun process to kind of like just, you know, really get into why something does matter. And sometimes there would be a fight that's like maybe considered one of the best fights of all time, but we couldn't really pinpoint anything that was influenced by it, so we had to cut it. And that was fun too, because it kind of really made your brain work, like, you know, kind of make your brain compartmentalize, like just because I love this doesn't mean it has to be included. And so that was kind of fun too.
Yeah, I mean, because the actual title of the list is fight scenes that influenced action, mm-hmm. which is like several layers of filtering right there, because it's like, okay, it has to be a fight scene. It can't be like a battle scene. It has to be a fight scene. So then it's like, okay, well, what's a fight scene? Like, what constitutes a fight scene? Well, like, does a shootout constitute a fight scene? Not really, unless there's like some element of close quarters combat, you know, so like the, you know, or like a chase scene. Does a chase scene count? Well, if they fight during it, it kind of counts, you know. And it's like, all right. And then like, what's influence? What does influence mean? Does it mean we have to specifically pinpoint other movies that this showed up in, or is it sort of a thing where it's like, well, they did this, and this obviously filtered out into the culture in some way. But then it's like, well, did it influence action? Right. I mean, there are fight scenes that influenced other things, but didn't necessarily influence action. So there was a lot of, okay, did it do this? Does it have this? Did it also do this? Did it also do that? And even then we had so many examples, and then it was kind of like, well, you know, you have to make sure that like action comedy is a thing, right? So you want to make it, cause you could just make it just a lot of fight scenes that just like really sort of broed out fight scenes. And it's like, no, like comedy is the whole thing. You know, like we have to make sure there's comedy in there. And it went on and on, and it was fun. I don't actually remember how we came up with it. I mean, we've talked about doing some kind of list like this, like action oriented, stunt oriented list, mm-hmm. big, you know, blowout historical list like this for a couple of years now. I don't remember the specific thinking that went through. I mean, it might have happened at higher levels than me, But it was great. And at first we were kind of like, wow, how are we going to come up with like 100 of these? And it's like, oh, you know, maybe it should be 25, maybe it should be 50. And by the end, we were just like, no, this has to stay, you know? I don't care if we still have 125, like this has to stay. Yeah, there were so many heartbreaking cuts from that list. My God.
All right. I'm going to put you on the spot. What's one cut that you personally fought for? You were like, we got to have this in here. It didn't make the list.
Oh man, that's tough.
Well, the thing is, I'm in my mind, like I would have to see the list to make sure that the stuff that like that I'm thinking about did in fact get cut. Yeah. Because there was a lot of, often what happens, and this is because, you know, we're all betas, you know, very often the person who makes the greatest case for a fight scene often winds up being the person who removes it in the end. Like usually you're like, I know I was the one who said we have to have this, but I guess we can cut it, you know. The one that this wasn't one of the last cuts. I mean, this got cut like a couple of weeks before we made the final cuts. But the one I kind of wish was still there is there's a great fight in The Big Country, William Wyler's Western, between I believe Charlton Heston and Gregory Peck, and it's like a fight scene that happens in the distance. It's framed as this really wide shot. So you just see the landscape and it's like totally empty and just these two little guys just like fighting. So there's no real, you know, it's not like a great stunt or anything like that. And in the end I thought, well, this probably didn't influence action, like, because I can't imagine anybody watching this scene and thinking, oh yeah, my like kick-ass action movie is going to have a scene like that. But it is such a beautiful scene, such a poetic scene in a movie that is kind of underrated and underseen. And it's a, like, I wanted to make more of a case for it, but in the end, like, I just couldn't, because it's kind of like, this probably didn't actually influence a ton of action scenes, but it's an incredible fight scene, you know?
Yeah.
That was kind of the thing, because I don't know if this was my most heartbreaking, but the one that really kind of helped me separate what's, you know, one of my favorites versus what's actually influential is the Blade Blood Rave. At the beginning of Blade, I was thinking, like, that's so iconic, everyone remembers that and everything, and I was like, that has to be there, you know, it's like one of the earlier superhero movies before the boom happened. And as we were talking about it over weeks and weeks, we just kept running into, like, well, what did it influence? And, you know, like, that was hard to cut, because it's like, I love that movie, I love that scene, but it was just like, yeah, you ran into the problem of, like, well, what is there, you know, is there anything we can, like, really say about this other than it looks cool, and that, you know, that's not enough. And yeah. And I'll just say for myself, the heartbreaking one for me was I kind of cheated a little bit, but I put the, you know, we all had to give our own lists in a doc, and then we'd work off of that. And the one I put the final hour of Transformers Dark of the Moon on there. And like immediately when we got to that, like everyone kind of was just like, no. And I was just sitting there like, well, okay. Like, yeah. but yeah, that was, again, I'm not heartbroken over it. I get it. But, you know, one day, we'll, you know, people will hear me.
The Bayhem is its own thing, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Blade one is interesting, too, because I agree. I like that is such an iconic sequence. But at the same time, it does feel like comic book movies in particular have like almost explicitly moved away from that sort of really bloody, violent, largely practical stuff. I mean, I guess not the bodies disintegrating, but everything else. You know, to what we have today, which is very different.
Yeah. Well, the thing that we did, and this was, I think, one of the reasons why that scene got cut in the end, was at a certain point we said, you know what, we have to limit it to one scene per franchise. Like it can't, we can't, because I mean, we had multiple Bond scenes on there, and you know, when it got time to cutting it, like finally getting it down to 100, we were just like, you know what, let's just have that rule for us, because that will actually make some of the tough choices that we're like unable to make. So, and we had the fight from the vampire ninja fight from Blade 2 in there. So we were like, all right, well, this feels like more influential. It's also a great scene from a better movie. So we're kind of like, all right, let's put that one in. But you know, that happened with, yeah. I mean, there were a number of really influential Bond fights. You know, I mean, I am a big believer that, you know, even though people like to make fun of the James Bond series, they have been an incredible showcase for stunts, and have done like pioneering work in terms of like moving action forward in interesting ways. And you know, there's a train fight in From Russia with Love that is, I think, hugely influential, and it's kind of like a really important moment in action. And you know, obviously there's like the parkour fights later and things like that. But we settled on the fight in the skies in Moonraker, which is like one of the worst Bond movies, right? but it's like that scene, without that scene, I mean, because that scene, when they first thought of doing that, everybody was like, what are you talking about? That's insane. Nobody could do anything like that. And they figured out a way to do it, and they had to like modify cameras. Yeah. And I have seen variations of that scene specifically in a number of movies, including, you know, Point Break and, you know, Mission Impossible. And that was like, okay, nobody did this before this movie did it. And after this movie did it, other people have done it, more notably in films that are perhaps better regarded. But it's like, doesn't happen without Moonraker, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. One last question on this front. It was interesting, too, because all right. So in the stunt awards, you can't really award animation anything, because animation does, you know, it's drawings on, you know, computers or on paper or whatever. But there are a number of animated sequences in the list of action sequences that influenced film. When you're thinking about how animation influences live action or even just other animation, I guess? Like, was there any difference in thinking there, I guess is my question here. Was there any difference in thinking, like, how you judge how animation influenced other animation, mm-hmm. live action, or what were you thinking?
I think there was some thinking into that, like, you know, it did, like, you know, how did it influence animation, and how, you know, where do we see this showing up in action? And I think, you know, the best example of that, you know, when you're looking at animation and action, is like, I think there's a direct through line from, like, you know, Tom and Jerry and the Looney Tunes to Jackie Chan, you know, to now with John Wick and everything. They're very, you know, Looney Tunes-esque, you know, stunts and everything. So I think that that's definitely something that we thought a lot about when looking at that kind of stuff. And like Popeye too, you know, like, you know, those rumbles and everything that he gets into. And to be honest with you, when we put this list together, and, you know, we had to come with our own stuff, I don't think I had any animated stuff on mine, because it's just like, I'm one of those people that whatever his name is, you know, Phil Lord, I think, would probably, you know, be mad at, because I think he gave Bilga some grief about, you know, where are the animated movies? But like, yeah, I'm definitely one of those people that is pretty bad about that. You know, I like animation and everything. It's just, it doesn't click in my head all the time that, you know, I need to include this kind of stuff. So that was a fun exercise. Like, we had a couple different people on the, you know, working team and everything who had much more expertise in that, who were able to articulate why the choreography that was drawn here has been, you know, mimicked in real life and everything. So that was nice. It was helpful for me, because, you know, I guess I'm an animation snob without meaning to be.
Phil Lord. Lordy, lordy, lordy. You know what really hurt about that? You know what really hurt about, I mean, it was fine. He didn't give me grief. It was, I published my top 20 list on Twitter, and he just posted saying, oh, no animated films, and put a little, you know, sad face, and a lot of people piled on him, which, like, after a while I felt bad about, because I actually like Lord and Miller's films. And yeah. the thing that frustrated me, I was like, okay, first of all, I was the guy who would not shut up about the Lego movie back in the day, put it on my top 10 list, wrote multiple pieces about it, you know, like wrote think pieces about it, think it's like a hugely influential film. I was one of the two guys who whipped votes behind the scenes at the New York Film Critics Circles to get into the Spider-Verse animation award, which I genuinely believe led to its helped lead to its eventual Oscar win. You know, so I was kind of like, and my thing was, you know what? I'm going to judge this most recent iteration of the Spider-Verse when I see the full movie, because it was half a movie. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, it was half a movie. You know, like, I was enjoying it, and then it was over. You know, so I, you know, like, I'm looking forward to seeing the second half and then judging it. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I felt like it ended halfway through. You know, that's a whole other conversation. Anyway, yeah. Animation, yes. You know, no, and this was something, and you know, we, I mean, a lot of us have written about animation and stuff like that, but we also have, you know, we have folks at Vulture who, you know, specialize in animation or who are like real experts in it and really know the history and stuff like that. So, you know, having them on board really helped to tease out, because it was kind of like, well, there's a lot of anime. I mean, you could make a list. You could make 100 list with all animation if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, even stuff like Looney Tunes, it was kind of like, well, they're so influential. Like, which one do we put in? You know?
Right.
And in fact, I don't know that we ever found out, because we were kind of like, where does the, like, who did the first fist cloud? You know, like, like the big, like, cloud with like the fists, you know, in the air and stuff. We're like, mm-hmm. who did the first mm-hmm. one? I don't think we ever kind of found it. For all I know, it might have been more of a, you know, cartoon, like a, you know, still cartoon thing, still right. comic thing. But right. So there was, and then it was kind of like, well, there's a ton of anime that you have to incorporate. And it's kind of like, what was genuinely influential? What is worth highlighting in this list? Again, in all these cases, it's like you could do a whole list of just this particular subgenre, you know? And because we're doing kind of a big list, we want it to be, you know, we want it to be accurate. We want it to feel, you know, thorough. We want it to feel international. We don't want to just be like, oh, you're a bunch of American movies, you know? But at the same time, like, you go too far in one direction and it feels like you're just pandering, you know, like you just want to make sure that this whole thing reads like a real thing, that like if you read it, you will learn a lot about the history of film.
Yeah.
And you won't feel shortchanged or, you know, or like pandered to or spoken over, you know?
Yeah. No, I will say again, I'll link to it in the email that accompanies this podcast, and folks should check it out. But it is a really kind of just amazing journey through the history of action filmmaking, just from, you know, just on a from The Silence to the early big spectacles to the, you know, kind of grittier stuff in the 70s and 80s, and then, you know, again, animation, big action. It's fascinating. I strongly recommend people check it out. You'll see your own through lines as you're going through it. You'll see the influence of Bruce Lee and everybody else. And I don't know, fascinating. We couldn't talk enough about it, but we are running out of time. All right. I always like to close by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if there's anything you think folks should know about, you know, action filmmaking, the stunt awards, whatever. What should people know?
I guess just, you know, if you're listening to this and you're involved in the action community at all, like, I'd love to have you next year. Most of the work that goes into this is just sending out email after email and, you know, often getting either no reply or who are you replies. But we did jump, like, I think, like, very close to, like, maybe 175 voters from year to year. So yeah, like, I just, if you're listening and you're involved in the action community in any way, like, this is who we're doing it for. So, I mean, before you know it, we'll be working on the next one that we start in the fall. So, I mean, it feels like it just ended and it's, you know, not that far away from going again. So, yeah, just, like, I'd love to hear from anybody. You know, like, I'm on Twitter and, you know, unfortunately, I'm leaving my DMs open for a little bit. So yeah, if anyone who, you know, wants to participate, that's who it's for, because I want this to be as big as it can possibly be.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would say as well. I mean, we want more participants. I mean, it was, you know, we got a really good group this year. We want more because it's obviously a huge community in terms of just the people who are working in it professionally, but also writers who write about action or people who are interested in action and know about it and know about stunts and things like that. Like, you know, like we want that kind of expertise and enthusiasm. And the thing that happens, of course, is the kinds of movies that we're talking about, they're not December movies, right? So, like, we wind up doing it at the end of the year, and it's like people are like, you know, well, you know, suddenly it's like everybody's mind is on Oscar bait, and it's like, where are the action movies? And it's, oh, right, John Wick, that was this year, you know, like, like, so, like, you know, movies that come out in January, February, March, like, that's our jam, you know? And so you come at the end of the year, and it's kind of like people have to be reminded of it. So it's always good to just try and sort of keep, and we want to do better about that as well. And like try to just keep a tally of the movies that actually have these action scenes and things like that, that, you know, if maybe it's not the greatest movie of the year, like maybe it's not a top 10 list contender for like best films, but like it has a couple of kick-ass scenes, you know, and it's got Marco Zarora in it, you know? So it's like, you should keep an eye on this movie, you know?
Yeah, no, the thing I just from my own perspective, the thing I am trying to keep a better handle on this year is all the direct to video stuff, the DTV, you know, VOD stuff, because I found myself at the end of last year looking back through my letterbox and being like, okay, there's some obvious choices. What's some less obvious choices? Yeah. And I had fewer less obvious choices than I might have liked, just because I am not as well versed in that as I feel like I should be.
Well, I would caution, like, I, you know, not to go too into the weeds because I know we're wrapping up here, but for like 10 years, I kind of was like so sick of like Hollywood action to the point where I was like only watching DTV, and it took me forever to actually get around to the John Wick and Mission Impossible movies, like the recent ones. And I just will caution people that if you're going to dive into DTV, there's a lot of garbage. So just like, you don't have to watch everything. Yeah. Like, I mean, it does have the stigma for a reason. I try to say like it's a worthwhile endeavor, but there's a lot of stuff that's like, man, like, I'll get halfway through something and just be like, man, why did I put this on? But like, even Scott Adkins, who I love, like, he's always worth watching because he's so charismatic, but at the same time, he's in a lot of garbage. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it, that is certainly true. Right? And it is, there is something frustrating about taking a shot, being like, oh, this looks kind of interesting, and then, oh, no, this is, turns out not interesting. Yeah.
It's produced by Netflix France. How bad could it possibly be? You know, and it's like, oh, it could be pretty bad.
Yeah. No, the role of Netflix in this universe is fascinating, yeah. And for a discussion for another time, because, again, we're running long here, but I really feel like there's that is a space they could be growing in and playing mm-hmm. more. Than they are, but well, yeah, there's Irish wish to make. So. All right, Brandon Bilge, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to have you guys on and talk stunts and action.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks, man. This was great.
Yeah.
All right. Again, my name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and we will be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.